Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Okay, everybody's finally warming up here in the south of China. Seriously, we were all shocked with this polar vortex that came out of nowhere. I mean, cold isn't really a big deal for me. I grew up in Connecticut where we had really rough winters with lots of snow, but it's not the same over here. I mean, there's no internal heating system. So basically, you're like an ice cube inside the buildings is the same as your outside. And if you're lucky, you might have a space heater. So let's hope the cold is over. And Chinese New Year is right coming up next. Mainland China is basically going to be shut down from the end of this week for a couple of weeks, probably until the middle of February or even the end of February, depending on what type of business you're doing with China. So basically, take a break from factories and any kind of companies you might be talking to here. And, but it's always a motivation for me to get as much work done before the country shuts down. And for the cross-border summit, we got a big sponsor with the China Merchants Bank in Sheko. They're a government entity and they're really excited to cooperate with us and it's going to be great. So keep that bookmarked Saturday, April 16th in Shenzhen, crossbordersummit.com. All right, enough of that. We got a good show for you today, so let's tune in. We have in Central Business District of Putian, Shenzhen, China, and a longtime friend and special guest, Peter Zaff from Global Sources. So for those that didn't catch it, definitely go back to episode number 79 of our series here. And he was talking about China sourcing trade shows and tips and tricks. So thanks again for coming on, Peter.
Oh, hey, great to be here today. You know, I'm based down in Hong Kong, but it's a short commute to get up here, about an hour. And great to catch up with you today.
Yep. Part of the cross-border commute that we sometimes do. So for those that maybe didn't hear you on the show that last time or, you know, aren't familiar, I'd love for you to give us a brief introduction.
Sure. Yeah. So we do a couple things. The first thing was we run the globalsources.com site, online directory of manufacturers and suppliers. So if you're looking for products or manufacturers and suppliers, check out globalsources.com. We also run trade shows, two sets of trade shows a year in Hong Kong in April and October. Product categories we cover are electronics, electronics with mobile products, gifts and home products, and fashion accessories. Those are on three sets of show dates. You can learn more about those at globalsources.com/exhibitions.
Great. So we've been talking a lot about Amazon and all these different circles online, and it's getting to be a huge trend. So I've definitely noticed it here with my business and podcast. How about Global Sources? What's the reaction with Amazon lately?
No, I think you and I were talking about it, and 10 years ago, like you said, it was build your website first,
then
do all the SEO around it to drive traffic.
Or wait a year.
Yeah. And it was a long process and a lot of work on top of all the sourcing. Then maybe 5 or 6 years ago, eBay came around and a lot of people were looking at selling on eBay. But you're right, now a lot of it is Amazon. And when I talk to suppliers, almost all of the suppliers say, or I'll ask them, hey, is your product selling in the U.S.? And a lot of them will say, yeah, it's selling in the U.S. Through an Amazon seller. So it's becoming much more common to hear Amazon as an answer, even when talking to the suppliers.
Yeah, like another side note, just yesterday there was a non-tech friend that's not very tech savvy visiting from the U.S. And he was saying, he says, I'm not even good with computers. I've been buying off Amazon for years, but even my brother, that I don't even know how he does it, doesn't have a computer, but he's buying off Amazon too. So it's really just massive, massive trends happening. So you mentioned it just now, but it seems like it's an Amazon first kind of distribution strategy now. Like back in the day, we talked about, you know, internet marketing, building a website, adding the product feed, finding the products, waiting for Google, you know, Google sandbox and everything. But now it seems like people are just skipping all over that and just going directly to Amazon. Is that something you can verify, or is it still a different channel, or what are you seeing?
You know, I think it depends on what kind of product you're working on and which community of people you're talking to. For the private label sellers that are copying existing products or doing minor improvements to existing products, Amazon first is the way to go. And we do see a lot of people doing that and an increasing number of people doing that. If you're doing innovative products or if you're a retailer, You may approach the market differently. A lot of the retailers, I think you mentioned, you might have talked to one last night. They do a lot of sales on Amazon, but Amazon's an additional sales channel. It's not necessarily their first sales channel. So I think for the young entrepreneurs that are doing incremental improvements, Amazon first, especially as a first online channel, definitely seeing a lot of that.
Cool. It's pretty exciting stuff, and everybody's excited. And kind of a little bit maybe off topic, but I think there's some relevancy is, of course, there's this crowdfunding craze and people just buying everything off Kickstarter and waiting for a year to get their products, or maybe not even getting it at all, but it's still massive trend. Is that something, how does that connect with Amazon, or is there any connection?
Oh, I think we do see a connection. I'll give you an example. We worked with a supplier in terms of trying to learn a little bit more about the process. The supplier makes some really nice alarm clocks, and you can check it out on either Amazon or Kickstarter. The supplier is called Hometime, H-O-M-T-I-M-E. And what we did with them is first we ran a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter to introduce their product to the market. And we raised, I think it was $60,000 or $70,000 for them. In that case, though, the product was already engineered and almost ready to go to market. So we didn't wait 12 months to make the product and ship the product. We waited about 1 or 2 months after the campaign was over. Then on the success of that campaign, we put the product in Amazon. I think we got it on Amazon about October. And we did some pretty good December sales. I don't remember the numbers, in the tens of thousands of dollars. And with that, we're trying to show good customer feedback, good margins, and good sales volume, with the next step, taking that information, online success, and crowdfunding success, and going to retailers and saying, hey, this is a great product, you should pick it up. So we're starting to see the broader life cycle, especially for new and innovative products, to be do the design, do the market validation, initial fundraising with crowdfunding, then cross the chasm to kind of mass sales online on Amazon, and then cross the chasm to getting into the retail channels. And not everybody will cross every chasm, but that's for a new and innovative product, I think increasingly the sequence that we'll see.
Sure. So it leads right into my next question is offline. I know it probably goes back to your earlier answer about depends on the product, but do people bother anymore with offline channels like retail or traditional sales channels?
You know, I was talking to the guys at 3Doodler who are based in Hong Kong. They do the plastic 3D pen. It basically puts plastic out and you can draw things in 3D. Really cool product. And they started with crowdfunding. I don't know exactly how much they did on online as a second phase, but I'm pretty sure they did. And then they're in retail stores. So they've gone through that life cycle, and about 85% of their sales are through retail stores. So definitely we see people are still going through retail and getting their product in retail stores. Now, keep in mind, the big advantage of being in retail stores, in my mind, is the shelf space and the advertising that you're getting. So you may get lower margins than you get on Amazon, and I've heard a lot of folks say that, but you're getting free shelf space for free advertising and creating awareness among the among customers about your product. So I think definitely there continues to be a place for retail, and it's as much about getting that product in front of consumers as it is an incremental sales channel.
True. Something I've never honestly gotten into in my experience. So I wonder if it is like advertising. I don't have this on my outline, but is there any costs? Or I mean, how does they still buy the product? I guess you still got to give them terms or?
Each retailer is different, but the big box retailers have really, really difficult terms, which is why a lot of people don't sell to them. They can be as much as payment terms are 90 to 120 days. We'll return anything that doesn't sell. And if we're going to do extra advertising for you, like in an insert or an end cap, we want you to pay us extra, and we want margins of 40 or 50%. So you put all of that together and you realize, actually you take a step back and you realize, look, if my strategy is to go from Amazon into retail channels, I need to make sure I price the product appropriately so that there's still margin for me when I sell into retailers and there's margin for retailers. And in some cases, that means you can't effectively compete on price anymore. You have to compete on having a differentiated and innovative product. But anyway, these are the more complicated problems as you start thinking about getting into all the channels.
Sure. But I guess probably people don't worry about that till later. So it seems like a lot of money on Amazon from what everybody's saying. Going back to on the sell side, factories and maybe trading companies over here in Asia, you know, they're usually your factories are usually at the booths and in the trade shows are very successful here. But I'm sure they hear about Amazon and they're tapping into this channel as well. Do they kind of get it yet? Are they building brands from what you're seeing? Are they distributing directly? Or what are your thoughts on what's happening on the seller side?
Definitely what we're hearing on the supplier side, everybody's interested in direct-to-consumer online sales. And for overseas, Amazon is a first channel that people talk about and that comes up. I'd break the suppliers into three groups. And when I say the suppliers, I'll talk about more the manufacturers. And that's those that are thinking about it but haven't done it yet. And then those that have tried it. There are more that are thinking about it and haven't done it than that have tried it. The ones that have tried it, I'll break them up into two groups. Those that have tried it and been successful, which for a manufacturer, very, very, very few. And those that have tried it and found that it was hard, because there's a lot of new things they have to do. The marketing, getting the copyright, the photos, making stock without a purchase order and any money to buy the raw materials, registering the brand, managing the channels, managing pricing. It just becomes a lot more complicated. And sometimes when they try it, they realize, oh, this is complicated. Not for me. I want to be just a manufacturer and have somebody else handle all of that. So that's the manufacturer side. But there's definitely another group of folks, and let's call them entrepreneurs, that can do all these things and then are working with the manufacturers to get product from the manufacturers, put them into FBA and sell them. And those would be your China-based private label guys. They're the equivalent of your US-based private label guys. And the community of them is large.
Definitely. I mean, we both meet them on a regular basis. And would you say those are more Westerners or foreigners here, or is it local Chinese or a mix?
I'd say there are definitely both groups doing it. There are Westerners here selling on Amazon that you and I both know, and there are also Chinese here selling on Amazon that you and I both know. If I had to roll the dice and guess which group was bigger, I'd go with the local Chinese, only because there's so many more of them here.
Yeah, and I was nodding my head a lot. Can't see that on audio, but it's true. Like the factors are still they love just getting paid up front and bank transferred to their bank account. But I think there's still a lot of them getting tempted with Amazon, I would say, but they need to do it right. And I still think they're still thinking about price, right? The Chinese mind is more like, if the price is cheaper, I'm going to sell more.
Well, I'll give you an example of one of the suppliers that we were talking to. And they were selling, they had products online that they were selling. They were trying to sell into retailers. And they were selling to other distributors also. And what happened is they sold at kind of a normal price to, I'll call it, other distributors. Those other distributors put the product online, and they put the product online at a very low price. So these would be, call it, you know, entrepreneurial private label sellers competing on price. But what this does to the brand owner, the China brand owner, is when they go and talk to the retailer looks online and says, hey, you know, either the suggested retail price you're telling me is wrong because it's a lot higher than what I see online, or I can't sell at this price that's online and make enough margin, so I'm not going to pick up the product. The retailer says that to the China brand owner. So the China brand owners are learning how to manage channels and manage a pricing so that they don't, you know, irritate one part of the supply chain. I know that was pretty abstract. Was that clear?
I think that makes sense. I mean, for anybody doing e-commerce, I think would get that, but I could put my words. Yeah, I mean, the Chinese will just drive prices, have always traditionally just driven prices down on eBay. Like, there's a story of a friend that was buying MP4 players before, you know, and selling them on eBay, and he getting really kind of excited. So he bought a container shipment of MP4 players to California. And he says by the time it got to the port, it was the same price on eBay that he paid FOB for. And he like lost all of his money because I think because he can't sell it even to a retail customer, but definitely not to a retail store that has to mark up. You know, I think pricing generally is like at least 3 times markup. Normally, I mean, as it really depends, 3 to 4. And the Chinese factory is like, oh, I can make this for $1. I sell this to my buyers for like $1.25. If I sell it online for $1.50, I make a lot of money or something like this. And then, but you know, so this is what they're not getting, right? So there's no way that a store could sell that for $1.50 if they're buying for like $1.25, or if that makes sense.
Well, and even on Amazon, if you're going through FBA with all the FBA fulfillment costs, you've got $3 or $4 in charges there. So almost your minimum selling cost is $5 or $6 to make money. I was walking the toy fair the other day, and I saw these. I hadn't seen them before. They're silicone shoelaces. So they're just silicone straps. I mean, you can look them up on eBay, and you stick them in your shoes, and they're for kids. They're very colorful, and they replace shoelaces. And because they're silicone, they stretch, so you can put your shoe on without unlacing. The FOB price for a set of those was about $1. And then I looked online, and the sale price for them is $7 to $15. So at $15, you're making a lot of money. At $7, not as much. So then you need to start running the numbers. I think all of those sellers, they're not actually manufacturers in this case. These are importers or private label sellers. But the economics are the same either way, right? And to the extent that many people can get access to the same product, they're all going to be competing against each other to try to drive pricing down. So now instead of competing for the buy box, which is what you did in retail arbitrage, now everybody has the same products and they're just competing to get more sales so they can show up higher in the Amazon results, which after a while you can only do by competing on price, which is why then the next step is to try to have your own more innovative products.
Yeah, it's just really amazing. I mean, we've been seeing this happening with, you know, with the internet and people. I still have friends in the US, they're like, oh, Mike, you're in China. I saw it online in a factory website or a trade directory like Global Sources for, you know, $5, and I see it in a store for $20. Can you get one for me? Or it's great. Everybody, it's like pricing is just getting so transparent, it seems, at least maybe from my perspective. But
yeah, no, it's definitely more transparent. And I mean, the $5 to $20 example is an interesting one, because if you try to, depending on the size and weight of that product, right? But if you airship the product, it's probably going to cost you $10 or $15 to airship. So you have the same landed cost of $20 to the consumer that you got in his retail store. If you ocean ship it and you add kind of all the costs, or if you try to sell it, you realize, oh, wait a minute, I can get it for $5. My logistics and custom duty costs are whatever, $2 to $5 per unit. My Amazon and FBA fees are $5 or $6 per unit. So what started to look like a $15 margin comes down to a $5 margin, and that's before return allowances, losses, and all the other things that can happen. Your monthly fees for all the services that you're doing, yeah, your Amazon marketing costs or your third-party marketing costs. So it's not as much of a slam dunk as people think it is, but there's still opportunity and money out there.
Definitely. So, you know, you've been networking a lot of these power sellers. I don't know if that's the word, that's the eBay word, but Amazon sellers that are doing pretty well. And we were just talking before the recording, but yeah, you gave a really great answer. And the idea of the focus of product, is it a niche? Is it a vertical? Is it one product? What do you kind of break it down as?
My sense is everybody finds their own formula for what's going to make them successful. What we're seeing is maybe a number of different models, and I'll just quickly run through them. You know, the first one on Amazon was retail and online arbitrage. And that one's great because you can get into it quickly without a lot of investment. And it's great because you can learn how Amazon works very easily. So it's a good place to start. What's not so great is that it's difficult to scale. You can't keep finding products.
Yeah. So that's like just maybe listen. So like I even have friends that go to Best Buy or Walmart and then they buy it at the store and they sell it on Amazon. That's retail arbitrage. Yeah.
Then the next step, if you've done that, then you say, oh, hey, let me get better access to products. Let me go directly to distributors and buy wholesale. And that's great, except that the brand owners and the wholesalers start realizing that a couple things are happening. One, they're selling a bunch of stuff to call it Amazon resellers who are then competing on price, driving price down, which is then making the traditional retailers mad because the traditional retailers are losing sales to Amazon. And that's blowback to the brand owner. So then the brand owner says, okay, I need to control pricing and channels better. So then you get to the third option, and that's where a brand owner works to, and it's definitely doable, have a single appointed kind of seller on Amazon. And you have to do a lot to manage the channels. But there are plenty of folks that their business is, hey, I'll represent Mr. Brand, I'll represent you on Amazon, and I'll manage your presence on Amazon. The disadvantage of that approach is the brand owner can decide to take their business somewhere else anytime. So the next thing you say is, oh, hey, I want to own the brand, because then the brand owner can't move somewhere else and I don't have to compete on the buy box. The first thing that we see people doing there is the, I think it's the $500 challenge. I think that's from Scott Volker on The Amazing Seller. And what, and that's $500, you know, go find something online, order a couple $100 worth, put it straight into Amazon and sell it. So the good news, low capital requirements, fast and easy. The disadvantages are you have no idea if there are regulatory compliance issues. You're a little shaky on product quality issues. There may or may not be patent infringement issues. You're just opening yourself up to some risks, both, say, regulatory, legal, and also Amazon. So you have to be careful about the types of products you do that with. But if you do that, you've learned a lot about working with suppliers, placing orders, importing products. So then you go to the next model, which is copy and improve. So you find a product, you read the reviews online, and you say, hey, I want to make it better. Mr. Manufacturer, can you make these changes for me? Send me the sample. Great, this looks good. Or do a couple rounds of that. Then order the product. I personally always recommend get a third-party inspection before the product ships to avoid quality issues. Receive the product, sell it on Amazon. Disadvantage, longer lead time, a little bit more cost involved. Advantages, you have a little bit more control over the product and a little bit more differentiated from other folks. Then the last model we see is just call it new and innovative product. And now you're starting to straddle the crowdfunding area. Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, in some cases, Amazon's not a great place to educate a customer about a new product. And crowdfunding is good for that. But anyway, that's kind of the last model. Hey, I've got this new idea. It is differentiated. I'll get it out to market. I'll do the marketing. I'll get a lot of sales before somebody copies it and make my money that way. But I think those are the different opportunities. And as you get toward the end, kind of the new products, you know, that's what it's been in our whole lifetime, sure. Right? Anybody can come up with a new product, but it's become so much easier to access everything to put the whole supply chain together to get that done. You know, 20 or 30 years ago, getting something manufactured in China and building the sales channel, that was hard. It's much easier now.
Totally, totally agree. And but I think, yeah, it's also, well, I still love Google, you know, and we're not talking about Google these days anymore as much. I wonder what they're thinking. But, you know, demand generation, right? It's still really keyword research, whether it's Google or Amazon, to see how many people are looking for a certain product. And so, yeah, I think that final product, if you make a new innovative product, you got to get people to know to even search or think or look for it. That's, I think, the challenge. I think a lot of my friends say Amazon's all about, you know, finding a search volume and fulfilling that search.
And there you'll basically be copying and improving an existing product. You find the need, copy the product, improve it, get better conversions and sales than the other existing listings.
Got it. So I think that fourth one seems like the most profitable for Amazon. And so, yeah, I mean, everybody I talk to every day is either selling on Amazon or thinking about Amazon sales. And it's 2016 now. Is the Amazon bandwagon, is there still room to get on the bus or get on the train?
Definitely a lot more people are talking about it. It's definitely getting more saturated. As I walk the shows, I think there's still a lot of opportunities. But people are going to have to think about how am I going to differentiate. The find something light and airship it to the Amazon warehouse, it's not that big a barrier for somebody else to find that same product and ship it. So the easy money might be gone, but definitely, you know, Amazon is making it easier to get product online. And I think because of that, Amazon's going to be in a really good position against other retailers because they can get improved products at better prices with wider selection available to their audience faster than traditional retailers, where you have to go to the buyer, convince them to pick up this product, get your logistics in place so that you can replenish them properly. It's just a lot harder to get into a traditional retailer. So if Amazon's going to have better selection with better variations, then buyers are going to keep coming to Amazon and come to Amazon more and more. And if that happens, well, it seems like then there'd still be a lot of opportunities on Amazon to be successful.
Yeah, just got to keep being, you know, just like any venture, you got to be, you know, a little bit patient and creative. So thanks again, Peter, for sharing. And I just want to make sure we talk about it. We've been talking about, you're preparing, your team's working hard on it. Of course, there's your spring conference, your spring trade show coming, and you're working on a special summit inside. Do you want to share with us about some details about it?
Sure, great. We've got, for our April shows, we've got 3 show phases, 4 days each, about 3,000 booths of suppliers at each phase. The first phase is electronics. The second phase is mobile electronics and gifts and home products. And the third phase is fashion accessories. And you can check those out at globalsources.com/exhibitions. Now, in conjunction with the second phase, we're going to do something new this year. We're going to run an event primarily targeted at online and Amazon sellers to help them learn how to source. So we've got some great speakers coming in, including you, Mike. You're going to talk about setting up a Hong Kong legal entity. And we've got some great speakers coming in to talk about sourcing. So the first day is going to be all education, learn about sourcing. On the second day, the first half of the day will be go walk the floor and talk to suppliers. The second half of the day will be come back and ask all the questions that you have after having talked to suppliers. A third day is going to be also walking the floor in the morning. And then the afternoon, we're going to focus a little bit more on being successful selling on Amazon. So we'll have a little bit of Amazon selling. And the place to find out more about that is globalsources.com/workshop. You can see the speakers that we have. We don't have a lot on the agenda yet. We're still finalizing that. But it's going to be a really, really great event.
Yeah, definitely. It's great because I think people like that. They come over here for the factories and the shows, but now they can actually learn and engage with some of the really power sellers and everything. So it's great. And
And that's what we're trying to do, is combine the learning with the actioning, the working with and talking to the suppliers. But hey, also really exciting, because we've talked about this a bit, you're also running a one-day show, a cross-border summit, which I haven't had an opportunity to ask you a lot about. Okay. Tell me and the audience, I guess, a bit about that.
Sure. I'm also scrambling to get this together. We have a few months. It's the cross-border summit. It's going to be the first annual conference for people doing business between China and, you know, overseas. A little bit online marketing and Amazon too, but also we're going to talk about brand building and distribution overseas. So it's going to be kind of a mix of the local Chinese sellers and marketers with the overseas visitors for your trade show. So yeah, I did it right before your phase two on Saturday, April 16th, and we'll have some speakers and some round tables. And I'm really excited to get some Global Sources there too and get some good deals going.
Great. No, sounds exciting. Yeah, so lots of educational events coming up for folks that are new to sourcing from China.
Okay. So I think that's a wrap. Again, we'll have to get you on more regularly too. And if there's ways people want to reach out to you, you've already given some websites. Is that the best way? Or
yeah, reach out to me directly, pzapf@globalsources.com. But for the other pieces, for sourcing suppliers online year-round, globalsources.com. For the trade shows, globalsources.com/exhibitions. And for the Smart China Sourcing Summit, where we're going to do some training that's co-located with the trade show, globalsources.com/workshop.
Perfect. All right, and that's a wrap. And all the links and show notes, as always, will be on the blog post for the show.
And we've also got a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/smartchinasourcing. If you want to keep up, we post good articles that we find about sourcing from China to help continue educating the community about best practices and how to work with China suppliers.
Awesome. Sounds great. I'll check that out too. All right, guys, that's a wrap. So now that the cold is behind us and spring is coming, it's going to be a busy time here in Asia with the spring season. There's always lots of events and trade shows. Gerard, a listener, and he's also with us as a guest on episode 90. He's getting ready to come over for a whole month. He's going to be going to Global Sources Fair, Canton Fair, various factories in Shantou and other places. And yes, coming to our cross-border summit too. So thanks, buddy, and I look forward to catching up. And we got an iTunes review, so I'm really excited. It's been a little while since we've gotten one, so let me read it off. In the U.S. on January 15th, 5 stars from CA Tech Guy, and he says, awesome guests, very relevant topics for internet entrepreneurs. The show always has good guests on, and I'm always learning something new. This is a must listen to for anyone involved in online businesses. So thanks, CA Tech Guy, and have a great week for him and everybody else listening. And we'll see you next week. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.